It's time for a solid hour of Tea Party Power with Mark Gillar.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. This is Mark Gillar, and our special guest today is Mondo Frazier. He has written a book, The Secret Life of Barack Hussein Obama. Now, Mondo Frazier is the founder and editor of Death by 1,000 Paper Cuts and has published more than 2,000 articles online, including for Andrew Breitbart's Big Journalism, Bloggers News Network, and Radar Online. He is a native of Moundsville, West Virginia, and right now we have him on live. Mr. Frazier, welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour.
Hi. Glad to be here.
I got to tell you, it takes a lot of guts to write a book like this. And as I was joking with you earlier, I hope the Secret Service or the CIA or the FBI isn't already tailing you around.
Well, no, but you know, I don't know about guts because, as we were saying, I don't think he worries about anything.
And no,
if he did, he would just sign another executive order.
I love
so,
it.
Yeah, so I don't think he's too concerned.
Well, you know, this guy promised to be the most transparent president of all time, and based on the title of your book, I'm going to guess you think he fell just a little short of that?
I think he fell short, although I have to say, I got to give him credit where credit's due. I think he is a very transparent president. I think you see right through him.
And,
you know,
I love
so
it.
I think he probably has got part of it right.
Well,
you know, but go ahead.
you talk about the Obama narrative. The whole thing is pretty much constructed, isn't it? I mean, I think everything about it is probably wrong, starting with where he was born.
Well, you know what? Somebody asked me. Well, I was on a corporate media outlet a couple days ago, and I'll tell you, if you want to close an interview down quickly, don't use what I said. Because they concluded the interview very quickly. They said, what do you think about his birth situation? And I said, well, you know, a lot of his fans think he was born in a manger. I said, but I'm not there yet. I said, I don't know. I don't know whether he's the bad seed or children of the corn. I don't know. But I said, something's not right. And then that was real quick, like, okay, that's it.
All right, well, Mondo, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because we've explored that issue a lot here on the Tea Party Power Hour. In fact, we had a three-hour birther extravaganza starring Jerome Corsi, Orly Tates, and a few other people, and five computer experts, one of which was the same guy that busted Dan Rather on those fake Bush National Guard documents, a guy named Joseph Newcomer. And I got to tell you, after listening to those experts, especially for about an hour, I became convinced that it wasn't real. And I'm on record, Mondo, I'm on record at one point as saying, hey, let's take all the birthers and the 9/11 truthers and put them on a giant spaceship and send them to outer space where they belong. I thought the thing was completely real, but whenever these guys got through and I took a look at the document myself, I realized that there was something wrong here.
Well, you know, when the whole birth certificate, and this is not a birth certificate book, it's got one chapter, but I do want to say that whenever that whole issue came up initially in 2008, people sent all kinds of things in, and I was covering two other stories, and I just looked at the issue really quickly, and then said, oh, well, but then a couple months later when I had some more time, I went back and examined it, and I was like, oh, give me a break. I can't believe it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, and then whenever he issued his so-called birth certificate, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, this isn't even a very good fake.
Right.
You know, it's not that it's a fake. It's like, holy cow, I can look at this, and in 2 minutes, you're like, wait a minute.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I'm one of those people. And I can't tell you definitively, and you know, the people who are throwing the labels birther around, it's not like they have a secret stash of information that only they are privy to. They don't know any more than anybody else does. They just have an abundance of ridicule to throw around.
I agree with you, and I also agree with what you said about the forger not being a very good forger. And by the way, for those of you who are playing along with our home game, all the things essential to the Obama narrative are found in layer number 8. Everything that's critical of that birth certificate was altered on layer number 8, and it's just absolutely amazing that this president can get away with just about anything. But hey, as you point out in the book, there's a lot more about this guy that's mysterious than his birth certificate. Let's talk about the fact that he went to Hawaii's most expensive prep school, then went to Occidental, then went to Columbia, then went to Harvard. How did he afford all this?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know. I don't know whether there's an Obama fairy godmother running around, which that would be good if there was, because that means at some point all this stuff will turn into pumpkins and everything else, you know, so maybe he'll disappear or something, but
I'm waiting on midnight.
Yeah, there you go. Midnight has to come at some point. Mm-hmm. But he's led some people would say a charmed life.
Yes.
And gotten in and beyond who paid for his education, you know, by his own admission, he's a C student, or not a very good student. I think that's what he says in Dreams from My Father. Not a very good student. Yet, boom, here he is. He ends up at Columbia. Now, at Columbia, we don't have the public records of how he did, but we know that he finished at Columbia with no better than a 3.1, I think,
mm-hmm.
in political science, which is like the gimme of all courses. And yet, you know what? He ends up at Harvard.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, how's that happen?
If I can share a personal story with that, my son graduated third in his class in high school, and he was 0.2 of a point behind the guy who graduated first. And the kid who graduated first was just an absolute genius. I remember I was talking to the kid back when he was in sixth grade, and he was talking about, you know, intercontinental ballistic missiles and the Cold War. And, you know, I mean, it was just amazing to talk to this kid. It was like talking to an adult. And he scored almost a perfect SAT score. He was a National Merit Scholar. He scored like almost number one on the National Latin Exam. Mondo, he applied to Harvard, and they wouldn't even look at him.
So how's Obama get in with a 3.1?
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to be mean, and Republicans don't get too mad at me, but, you know, when you take a look at some of the people that have gone there, Bush, Kerry,
yeah.
Obama, obviously yeah. Who you know has a little bit to do with whether or not you get into Harvard. So the question is, who did he know?
Yeah, a lot of the Ivy League, I think, is like that. You know, I mean, it's like they should change their slogan. I don't know what their slogan is. They probably excellence or something. They should just change their slogan to where the elite meet, you know, or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, that whole thing about, and of course, Yale has the Skull and Crossbones Club, and I don't know. It's all these people. I mean, their last name gets them in, so I'm not too impressed. But you talk about Columbia. Now, I know he was there because I read an article that was published in the Columbia student newspaper that he wrote when he was a senior, and there were 5 examples in a very short article of subject-verb non-agreement. And I got to tell you, and any of my old English profs who are listening will back me up on this, if I can pick that out, it's pretty blatant.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I don't think, or I don't know, okay? I wasn't there with him. He's a little, you know, but I think the book makes a fairly convincing case that there's probably a pretty good chance that he wasn't there.
Okay.
I think people have heard that the Fox News interviewed 400 of his classmates and nobody remembered him.
Right.
I interviewed the president of his class, Wayne Allen Root, and he said, no, he doesn't know anybody in the class that knows him. And he had the same major, political science, so they would have taken classes. He never met him. He was never in any of those classes.
Yeah, and we both know that when you get into those upper-level classes, they get smaller and smaller and smaller. And yeah,
right. Good point. Yeah, you're talking 5, 6, 7 people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody saw him. And what little Obama says in Dreams for My Father, I think he spends a total of about a page and a half on when he was at Columbia. And the page and a half has nothing really about when he was at Columbia. It just has like stream of consciousness, like, oh, I was like this and I was like that. And,
yeah.
You know, nothing. And, you know, the people that were interviewed, and they said, no, we never saw the guy. He said he was in a black student organization, and the vice president said, I've never met him. I'm surprised as you are. Yeah.
You know what else is true about that time period? I'm still waiting for some girl to come forward and go, yeah, I dated Barack. We went out for a while. I'm just waiting for that to happen, and it hasn't.
This is just one little tiny thing. I tried to just put all kind of stuff in the book. You know that he was rejected for a pinup calendar when he was at Harvard.
I didn't know that.
Well, the only thing I said was, I'll bet the selection committee didn't include the Obama girl.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
But, well, yeah. when he was supposed to be at Columbia, in Dreams of My Father, he does mention, like, he's this penniless person that has he talks about sleeping out on a fire escape or sleeping in an alley because he didn't have it. But you know, if you go back through all the records, there's 7 different addresses that the media has said that Obama lived in. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Different apartments. I'm talking the New York Times. They're documented in the book. I think there's like 7 different apartments that the media gave where he lived. But if you go back to the New York phone directory,
mm-hmm.
At the time he was there, there's a B.H. Obama lives in the same place the whole time, and it's not bad. It's not a bad neighborhood. It's not a bad apartment. So it did cost some money. Now, was he living there? Who knows? Who knows?
Nobody knows anything about this guy. It's amazing. I can't believe, you know, I've had a number of people on the show, Susan Daniels, who pegged the Social Security number as being a fraud.
Yeah.
You know, I've had Orly Tates, who, you know, is having the state of Hawaii violate its own laws. I mean,
yeah.
The minute, according to her, the way the Hawaii law is written, the minute he released that, file of the birth certificate, being able to look at the original, is something that she should have been able to access, given the way Hawaiian law is written, and because he sacrificed all privacy at that point,
right.
And she said that, you know, they'll just sit there and throw her out of court without any real reason. It's ridiculous what this guy's gotten away with. But please, let's continue. Do you think the C? Because there's a lot. I mean, when you're talking about what's not known about Obama, there's a lot to cover. Do you think the CIA was somehow an asset, or do you think rather that he was a CIA asset during his meteoric rise?
Well, you know what? The book makes a case that it collects a lot of information, and I don't say that he is. But I put all the information end to end there, and I let the reader, what do they think? And one of the things I'll just mention, that one of the pieces of the evidence is what I call Obama's excellent Pakistani adventure.
Ah, yes.
Okay, now he's supposedly wearing thrift store clothing with no money, yet he somehow finds the money to fly to Pakistan.
Sure.
Okay. Well,
because we all know that back then air travel was so cheap.
And also because Pakistan is like a travel paradise. So that's where you'd want to go. I mean, you're a fun-loving kid. Where are we going to go? Let's go to Pakistan. Forget all these other places.
Yeah.
So he goes there.
Maybe he went in the off-season.
He might have went in the off-season, although, you know, he might have heard that the martial law season was a good time to go because it was under martial law when he went.
Sure.
And the streets were jammed with Afghani refugees. And when he gets there, where does he stay? He stays for 2 weeks in the Lahore Hilton International. Now, I don't know. They may have had an Obama thrift store clothing discount or something, but how does he pull this off?
Good question.
That's not even the best part. And this all comes from foreign newspapers, excuse me, who reported this stuff, but oddly enough, it was never reported in the United States. Once he got there, he ends up on the other side of the country in a guarded compound of a wealthy estate of one of the wealthiest families in Pakistan, and he goes bird hunting with the future president and prime minister of Pakistan. Now, he's a 20-year-old nobody.
Right.
Who arranged this trip? How did it come about? And why, and this is the most unbelievable part, why did not Obama breathe a word of it in 800 and some pages of autobiographies in which he mentioned everything, real, imagined, and fictional?
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that at the time you couldn't travel to Pakistan with an American passport.
Well, you know, actually, in my research, I had heard that, right?
Right, that's what I heard. Correct me, yeah.
Okay, in my research, you could. There was a travel advisory that was out at the time.
Okay.
It was advised by the State Department not to go there because of the martial law. However, you were still able to travel. Americans were still not banned from traveling.
Okay.
There.
Thanks for that. Yeah,
and I was like you. I thought, well, he wasn't even allowed, but I'd found that there was an advisory, but it wasn't a ban. But anyway,
go ahead.
He doesn't mention this anywhere. Now, remember back in 2008, he's running for president, and he's getting beat about his head and shoulders over foreign policy experience.
Right.
And people were saying, you don't have anything. Wouldn't it have been helpful at that point to pipe up and say, well, hey, man, I know the president of Pakistan.
Yeah, we go hunting together. I'm a big second guy, hunter's rights, you know.
He never said a word. And it was the president of Pakistan who says to the Pakistani press, I went bird hunting with that guy. You know, and and we still don't know. Well, gee, how did you get there? How'd you afford 2 weeks in the Lahore Hilton? And how'd you end up at this guy's estate? Who introduced you?
Mm-hmm.
We don't know any of that.
I think it's also interesting if you go back to when he was a kid. You know, he's flying back and forth to Indonesia at a time when the jet set traveled. Now I know now airplane is about like a bus used to be.
Yeah.
But back then, that wasn't the case. And so a lot of people looking at today's experience would go, so he flew to Indonesia, big deal. But at the time, only the wealthy traveled that extensively. And he was flying all over the place. And I just don't know where the money came from. I mean, I know he lived with his grandparents while his mom pursued her academic career. But there's nothing about their income that would suggest they had the income to do all of this.
Oh, you know what? His grandparents and him, that's another. I wish that they would have said, could you write an encyclopedia-sized work?
Uh-huh.
Because that's what it would take to cover all this. But, yeah, you're right. Nothing. Where'd the money come from?
Yeah.
Nobody knows.
I tell you, if you want to have real fun, take those nude photos of Stanley Ann Dunham. And speaking of the FBI, take the pictures of Stanley Ann Dunham holding young Barack Obama and run it through some facial recognition software. Now, when there was even speculation that Sarah Palin had posed nude somewhere, every newspaper in America picked it up. And here's a case where, I mean, with the one possible exception being Jay Leno, Stanley Ann Dunham has the most distinctive chin I've ever seen. And yeah, there is no question in my mind that those photographs that surfaced in the collection of Frank Marshall Davis's pornography collection, that's her. But yet the media doesn't seem to care because, once again, you know, everything slides off this guy.
Yeah, I agree. I mentioned those just briefly that, you know, hey, you can find them on the internet, pull them up if you don't believe it, and come to your own conclusion.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's absolutely her. And I love the way those people at Scopes.com said, oh, no, that's actually porn star so-and-so.
Yeah.
I pulled up that porn star's pictures too. I mean, I by the way, for the record, Mondo, such things disgust me, but it was research that had to be done. And so I pulled up those pictures and I put them all out side by side, and it's not even close. 1 million out of 1 million people looking at Stanley Ann Dunham, and I forget the name of that porn star, and then looking at those nude photos from the Frank Marshall Davis collection, which will be coming to a museum near you soon, and 1 million out of 1 million people would pick that as being Stanley Ann Dunham. It's absolutely amazing that the mainstream media won't even touch that one.
Well, you know what? And I have to be fair here. I try to be fair in the book. When I talk about corporate media, you know, Fox News doesn't, they're not, I think, and I used to be a big Fox News watcher, but you know what? I just see them as an extension of all the things that we've come to love in the corporate media on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's going to be long until they're right there with them.
Well, first of all, I think you're right. And I can tell you that I've had four people on from Fox, three of them supposedly Republicans, and one person, I had Juan Williams, who I think a lot of Democrats would say isn't truly a Democrat. But the bottom line is that I brought up the birth certificate issue with three out of four of them. And one of them, I had to cut it out of the interview because she actually got so upset. She goes, okay, that's it. I don't want to waste any more oxygen talking about this. And I had retired Major General Paul Vallely on, who was the Fox News terrorism expert for many, many years. They signed him right after 9/11. And he told me that he still has a lot of friends at Fox, and they have been specifically told, you do not bring this issue up on the air. And the only time it's been brought up in the last few months was when Greta Van Susteren asked Donald Trump about it. And her purpose, her goal seemed to be to shut it down by saying, well, yeah, I happen to believe the birth certificate is legit. And I'm thinking, really, Greta? Have you looked at it? You're a freaking attorney, for crying out loud. So I know where you're coming from. In fact, you know what? I'm not going to hide names. I don't care, because the odds of anyone from Fox News coming back on my show are pretty slim. You know, I invited Essie Cupp had been on my show. I never had trouble contacting her. She always responded to my emails and phone calls. And when I told her I wanted to bring her on the show to talk about why corporate America wasn't mentioning the corporate media wasn't mentioning the birth certificate, she wouldn't even respond to my emails or phone calls. Now, I had Jedediah Bila on. She got noticeably upset when I brought up the birth certificate. She's a Fox News contributor. And I had Margaret Hoover, the great-granddaughter of Hoover, on the show, and she was the one. And by the way, if the fact that one day the Republican Party might be in the hands of the Margaret Hoovers and the Meghan McCains doesn't scare the hell out of you, it should. But anyway, so Margaret Hoover was the one who got upset and said, I don't want to spend any more oxygen talking about this issue. And I was like,
she hasn't spent any so far.
Well, exactly. Well, on my show, she didn't want to spend any more oxygen. Apparently, the 5 minutes we had talked about it was just way over the line as far as she was concerned. And, you know, Juan Williams, and now that I'm thinking about it, I can't remember if this happened on air or off air, but he was the only one that you know, I was asking him some questions about the birth certificate, and he was the only one that was at least, you know, cooperative in going along with it. But anyway, so yes, I can tell you that Fox News it does not want to talk about this issue. And I was calling into Sean Hannity's show one day, and the subject of that day was the Occupy Wall Street. But I told the call handler, you know, I really have a question about the birth certificate I'd like to ask him. And she was like, oh, you know, I really wish you would. That's an old issue. I mean, it's not really that relevant anymore. And you know, it's better that you don't bring that up. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, I was first time caller, but so whether it's Sean Hannity, Glenn Beck, Jedediah Bila, Margaret Hoover, S.C. Cup, you know, nobody wants to talk about this.
Well, you know, with Margaret Hoover, if you would have told her that Barack Obama's birth certificate somehow had a post-it note on it that said he okayed gay marriage, she'd have talked about it for hours.
Yeah, absolutely. That's true, and I think Meghan McCain would have been right there with her. But it's ridiculous to me that Fox News is now going the way of the mainstream media. And, you know, as a hardcore Tea Partier, as the name of the show, Tea Party Power Hour, would suggest, I couldn't believe whenever, you know, Bill O'Reilly was saying that the Tea Partiers were being unreasonable, you know, with this whole thing about raising the debt ceiling. And, yeah, God forbid we should not want the government to spend money they don't have. So, very unreasonable.
Well, you know what? I used to watch Fox,
right?
But now I guess I just do what I've been doing for the last 4 or 5 years. I just go to the internet and try to read the foreign press and compare it to what's going on in the nation and see what they're leaving out. But
do you think there's strong grounds for the fact that this guy is a true socialist at his core?
Well, he ran on a socialist party. I mean, when he first ran, he signed the pledge. He was a card-carrying socialist. So, yeah, but you know what? People labeling him a socialist, I'm going to tell you, my own thoughts about this are that Barack Obama has almost no ideology. He does not care. He does not care. I think if you gave Barack Obama a lifetime membership to a golf course and promised him a party every week, Barack Obama would probably be another Ronald Reagan, like they were trying to paint him in the first place.
Wow.
He doesn't care. I mean, people were talking about him being undercover Muslim, but you know what? He's killed more Muslims than any other president we've had.
True.
Yeah, so I don't think he's a Muslim. I mean, he's got a million different, he's got 4 or 5 different covert wars going on. He's just bombing everybody that moves in the Middle East. And I don't think he has very much loyalty or to any cause. I think whatever will get him along, that's the cause he'll jump on. And if he thought that the Tea Party could take him where he needed to go, I think you might have a new co-host.
Well, you know, I've joked in the past that the Tea Party should get behind Barack Obama, because if we gave this guy 4 more years after he were through doing whatever it is he's going to do to the country, I don't think we'd have problems getting conservatives in office again. So, you know, I thought we should just like all get a bunch of signs and say Tea Party for Barack and march in Washington and really go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, you're right, because when he was elected, there was a lot of long faces among conservatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people were emailing me on the morning after the election, and I said, cheer up, he's going to be good for business.
Yeah.
he's going to be the best thing that ever happened. because think about it. I mean, and people really were upset when I said I had a hard time with McCain. He's not a conservative, and he bashed conservatives. I'm like, why would I vote for this guy?
Right.
He doesn't like conservatives, and he bashes them every chance he gets. So I don't care if he's got an R by his name or a D, you know? And but with Obama, I said, think about it. We could be spending the next 4 years defending McCain. Now, that's a thankless task.
Correct.
You know? But instead, we're going to get for the next 4 years where we're going to be able to draw distinct differences between what Obama represents and what we represent. So make the most out of the next 4 years.
Or as I said the day after the election, now it's our turn to bitch.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not, you know, the thing about it, I hate all these so-called conservatives that, I don't know. I'm not sure if they were raised in a family where they were read Emily Post every day, and they're not supposed to be confrontational. They're not. They're just compromising people. That's all. They just. I don't know. I have a problem with people who say they're conservatives and aren't.
Well, there are a lot of them out there. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh,
you know,
my goodness.
Meg Whitman actually said at one point that she had taken a environmental cruise with Van Jones and was very impressed with him. And speaking of people who aren't conservatives, what do you think about Mitt Romney? I mean, this guy's Mr. Cap and Trade, a Romney care.
You know what? A couple of different shows I was on, people say, who do you like among the Republicans? I said, anybody I haven't looked into. because anybody I've looked into, they're horrible. And Mitt Romney, you know, he's not gotten one bit better than 4 years ago, and he was pretty bad then. You know, I really, you know, people accuse Obama of being android. Mm-hmm. You know, Mitt Romney might be the first president assembled totally with parts from Home Depot. I mean, he's just a constructed candidate. Well, I don't know if he looked at Obama and said, that's the model I'm going to use.
Uh-huh. Well,
he's the Obama of the Republicans.
I got to tell you, from the news broadcaster hair to the spray-on tan to the fake smile, I mean, everything about this guy just seems fake. I think he realizes he stepped in a little bit whenever he went after Perry on the global warming issue. And, you know, now he's out there trying to rewrite his story the same way Obama did, you know, saying, well, you know, Bob, we're not certain how much humans are contributing, so I don't know if it justifies spending this amount of money. It's like, where in the hell did that come from, Mitt? I mean, that's not what you were saying a couple of years ago. So, yeah, the guy's 100% constructed. I don't think there's any question about that. And speaking of construction, and let's go back to the formative years of Barack Obama, this guy has rubbed elbows with some of the most radical conservatives in American history. I mean, he was, you know, supposedly rubbed elbows with Cloward and Piven. We know he had a relationship with Bill Ayers, communist Frank Marshall Davis. I mean, just knowing any one of those people would have been an interesting factoid, but this guy knew them all. I mean, how do you think this happened?
Well, I can't tell you how I really think it happened.
Yes, you can. This is
no,
a Tea Party Power Hour. Why can't
I know.
Why not?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll give your listeners a clue.
Okay, fair enough.
I think it happened because I think that Obama is part of a power structure that includes our last four presidents, and I'll leave it at that, and people can go do some digging.
Okay.
Find out what the last four presidents have in common. Two are Democrats and two are Republicans, and you'll find out what I'm talking about.
Okay.
What I'm alluding to.
Is this suggesting that they all attended Bilderberg meetings, or?
They're all, you know what, I think all four of them are just stooges. You know, and they've governed the country like they were stooges. I mean, no one can tell no one can stand up and say, you know, Bill Clinton was not a slave to his appetites. You know, and whoever controlled those appetites controlled Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and, just those little fat, chubby interns coming, and he was a happy man.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll tell you what. People go, well, those people are stupid. And I said, every time you look at your TV and you see your senator or the president or anyone on there, and you're tempted to say those people are stupid, you stop yourself and say they're doing exactly what they want to do. They're not stupid. They're doing exactly what they want to do.
Yeah. I think there's a strong argument, though, and I know you referenced some of the gaffes in his book that the corporate mainstream media won't touch, but there's really a good argument that Obama's not the sharpest tool in the shed. I mean, a lot of people make a big deal out of the 57 states thing. That may have been a gaffe because everybody knows there are 57 Muslim states. But the guy said that company owners, employers would receive a 3,000% discount in their health care premiums if, you know, once Obamacare kicked in. Having such limited math skills, he didn't get that anything beyond a 100% discount would mean the government would have to start paying the employers. I mean, give me a couple more. The guy also said, first of all, he mispronounced Corman twice in a very short period of time within the same speech, so he can't read very well. What else? Oh, I love this one. When he was speaking in Selma, Alabama, he said he was born because of the Alabama, you know, the march across the bridge, and it was 4 years after he was born. He said America invented the automobile. I've got that on tape. I mean, he doesn't know his history. He doesn't know geography. He tried to say the 4th of May, and instead of saying Cuatro de Mayo, he said Cuatro de Cinco, which is 4 of 5.
Yeah.
Even Bush got that one right. So I will say this. I will sit down, and I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed either, but I will sit down beside Barack Obama and take an IQ test any day of the week. This guy is not what he was promised to be. Everybody's saying, oh, he's got the highest IQ of any president of all time, and he's really not that bright.
Well, you know, the media, if you're running for president, the media, if you're a Democrat, automatically you become so smart you can split atoms with your mind. I mean, but I'm going to tell you this. If I'm, I was trying to think of a diplomatic way to say it, but I'm going to tell you what, if I'm on Jeopardy and I see Barack Obama sitting next to me, I'm thinking I'm going to have a good day. That's just the way I feel.
I have a reel that I'm putting together, and I can't wait to publish this on YouTube. But what I do is I intermix really stupid things that he has said with all these commentators talking about how he's so smart, he has such a high IQ, possibly the smartest president of all time. And I got to tell you, when you lay these things back to back, it is absolutely hysterical. I'm not quite finished with it, and frankly, I don't think Barack's through giving me material. But
well, see, you just hit the nail on the head. You're going to lay all these clips back to back, okay? And you won't have to say anything. Just laying his miscues back to back, end to end, in a YouTube video, and people will scratch their head and go, what the heck is going on here? That's kind of what I did in the book. I tried to lay fact after fact after fact after fact so that people, some people you'll never reach.
Right.
And some people you don't need to reach. In fact, some people will say, well, we thought you would have a picture of him shooting a baby in there. And, you know, I'm like, well, I couldn't get that one. I mean, you'll never satisfy some people at either end. But the people in the middle, including a sizable percentage who actually put Obama over the top last time and may be tempted or not to vote for him this time, those are the people I was shooting for. Those people who would look at it and say, you know what, there's something not right here.
My thought is you put the things back to back and you give the people watching it a chance to believe Barack Obama's promoters or to believe their own eyes. And that's about the only way you can do it, because there's an old saying that someone convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. And, you know, you and I could sit there and lay this stuff out and really bash Obama, and they would just get defensive and resistant. But lay it out there. Let them come to their own conclusion.
Right.
Well, listen, with the time we have left, Mondo, and by the way, I've really enjoyed this. You're hysterical. I mean, sometimes I get people on the show and I've got to drag stuff out of them, and you've been great. Could you tell us about your book? And it's like, yes.
Well, go ahead.
Well, you know, yeah, there's a ton of stuff in it.
Yeah. No, I was just saying, sometimes I have to ask people things and they give me one-word answers. But tell us – but tell the listeners, and don't worry about that thing going off in the background, we can go over. Tell the listeners where they can get a hold of a copy of this book.
It's everywhere. It's on Amazon, and it's done pretty well on Amazon, actually. It's on all the Barnes & Nobles. It's online at iTunes if they want an electronic download. It's on at Sam's Club online. It's Books A Million. It's pretty much everywhere, and
it should be.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I was kind of shocked yesterday. The National Enquirer had a piece on it.
Wonderful. Well, for those of you going to a bookstore and getting it, you know, want to get it in your hands physically as soon as possible, just look for the picture of a young African American metrosexual on the cover. Which I think you've captured that part of him in a very, very good fashion with the photo you chose. And that will be the Mondo Frazier book, Secret Life of Barack Hussein Obama. I love this. This is a book, and the timing couldn't be better. Thank you for writing it, and thanks for being on the show, man. You've been a real hoot.
Well, hey, thanks for having me. I'll come back anytime.
I appreciate that, and I will take you up on that offer. I'd love to do it again and maybe make an entire show out of your interview. That would be fantastic. Thanks for being on, Mondo.
Okie doke. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar, a production of the Conservative Broadcasting Network.